After you've turned to that number, would you please turn in your Bibles to the third chapter of the book of Genesis? Genesis, the third chapter. For those of you that were here this morning, you know that we talked about godliness. And godliness was defined, as we see it being defined in Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words, as an attitude that was Godward. Godward's an interesting word, but it does carry with it the idea of something that always is pointing toward God. Like a compass always points toward the magnetic North Pole, we see someone who is godly is someone who is always keeping themselves pointed toward God, thinking about God in the decisions that they make at work, thinking about God in the decisions that they make at recreation, thinking about God in the decisions that they make about their relationships. Everything that they do always points in that particular direction. So we have to understand that if we are going to be godly people, then God is going to be what everything that we think about, everything that we work toward, is always focused on. We have a Godward attitude about it. We can't completely get God out of the picture in the lives that we live. Ungodly people live their lives with God having no part to play in the things that they do. And we know ungodly people. Most people that we know are ungodly. That doesn't mean that they're as bad as they could be, but it does mean that ungodly people make their decisions irrespective of what God would want them to do. The problem is that even godly people sometimes can have godliness that they disregard and become ungodly. Just like a person who has a compass that points toward magnetic north can put it in his pocket and not use it. Is the compass doing what it's supposed to do? Certainly. But the person isn't utilizing what he has at his disposal. Does that mean that the compass doesn't work? No. It just means that he's not utilizing it. The person can also have the compass and have it out. But if he's not looking at the compass and not utilizing it to the best of its ability, always concentrating on something else, always distracted, then, again, someone may not go north when that's where they intended to go. It happens that way in spiritual matters as well. Tonight I'd like us to look at just a few biblical examples to see what happens when people take their eyes off of the Lord. When we lose sight of the Lord, to look and see what happens. One wonderful case of that is in this case of Eve. Do you remember back in the beginning, God had an amazing relationship with Adam and Eve? I don't expect that when he walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day, that this was the first time that that had ever occurred. You get the idea that instead of them hiding from him, that normally it was a situation in which God came down and walked with them and talked with them and they shared their day together, and it was a time of wonderful fellowship between Adam and Eve and God. But yet, that fellowship that man had with God in the very beginning was something that was disrupted by something that Adam and Eve did that is described here in the first few verses of chapter 3. Now the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made, and he said to the woman, "Indeed, as God said, you shall not eat from any tree of the garden." Do you know the rules, Eve? Is what he says.
And the woman said to the serpent, "From the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but from the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or touch it, or you will die." Eve knew the rules. She knew what was godly. She had lived her life in a Godward fashion. She had walked with God. She had talked with God. She had understood what God expected of her and what God expected of Adam. And she knew it well enough to be able to recite it back when the serpent asked. But the serpent said to the woman, "You shall surely not die. For the Lord knows that the day that you eat of it, from your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." So here, this serpent comes along and says that God, that you know to be good, is not a good God because he's been telling you something that is not true. The God that you know is so good as to have provided you with everything that you need, who has made you happy in every way that you can imagine, is not a good God because he's actually trying to withhold from you the greatest of happiness that you can imagine, and that is this knowledge of what is good and what is evil. What is good, which she possessed, is something that this serpent says, you don't even know. And you can have the knowledge of what is good and what is evil if you eat of this fruit. Now the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes, and the tree was desirable to make one wise. Do you remember where we ended the sermon this morning with the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life? Here we see them in a little bit different order. She sees that it was a delight to the eyes, the lust of the eye. The tree was desirable to make one wise. The lust of the boastful pride of life. It was good for food. It mentions that first. So we do have the right order here. Lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, and the pride of life. All of those mentioned. So here, all of these things are tempting her at the same time. And she also, she took it, its fruit, ate. She gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. And then the eyes of both of them were opened. And they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made for themselves loin coverings. Here they never had this strange feeling before, but now they have a feeling that they are exposed. This feeling that there's something missing now, all because they had violated what God had told them to do. And there'll be other consequences. The feeling of guilt in which they have to hide from God and they hadn't hidden from him before. The feeling in which they blame one another instead of being in solidarity with one another. The consequences that come in association with their particular sin, in which we see the ground being cursed because of Adam's sin, the woman pain being multiplied in childbirth as we see being associated with Eve's sin. Do you see? What was the problem? She was ungodly. He was ungodly. Because there for one brief moment, they took their eyes off of the Lord. They weren't thinking about what the Lord told them. They weren't thinking about what the Lord wanted. They weren't thinking about anything except the sin that they wanted. And what they wanted and what they wanted now. What a childish way to think about things.
I've been blessed over the last 3 years with some young people around my house. My own children have had children themselves, and it's quite a blessing. One of them is a male child who just turned 3, his name will not be mentioned. It's very interesting to watch him, and I'm not mentioning this because he succumbs to the lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, or the pride of life, because I do not believe he's old enough to engage in any of those particular kinds of things. I don't believe him to be a sinner. But it is interesting sometimes when I will tell him not to do something, to just watch what goes through his mind. I'm not a mind reader. But sometimes I'll tell him what not to do. I'll tell him what will occur if he does it. And I'll watch his eyes move back and forth like this as he contemplates, it just might be worth it. You know, this is what I want, and this is what I want now. He's not thinking about what a wonderful granddaddy I have. And you know, here's the one who is full of food and fun. He's thinking, oh, what a mean granddaddy I have who doesn't let me do the very thing I want to do now. And I think that was the problem here that we have with Eve, and that we have also with Adam, who seemed much more uncritically to take the fruit. Notice that Eve hadn't fallen over dead and eat it himself. Not thinking about what God said, not thinking about what God wanted, and in very ungodly fashion, take his eyes off his spiritual compass and do what he wanted to do rather than what God said to do. Do we ever find ourselves in that situation? Now, some people say, well, what's the big deal about eating fruit that God said not eat? Let me tell you, we all bear the consequences of that act. The very fact that we will one day die can be traced back to that act. The very fact that every one of us suffers. The very fact that every problem that you face as a human being can be traced back directly or indirectly to what your first ancestors did here all goes back to the fact that they had their ungodly moment. We do not become sinners because they sinned. We become sinners when we have our ungodly moments. But we bear the consequences of their sin because there was that one moment in which they decided, you know, rather than do what God says, I will do what I want to do. I'll take my eyes off my spiritual compass and I'll go my own way. And in doing so, they broke faith with God. And broke the relationship with God, died spiritually, and were exiled from the Garden of Eden. And exiled from the Tree of Life. You see, it matters what we do. Godliness matters.
Another occasion when we see people losing sight of the Lord in ungodliness is found in the 20th chapter of the book of Numbers. Only this time there's something perhaps a little bit different than just out and out rebellion involved. The children of Israel have wandered in the wilderness, and when you have perhaps 3.5 million people wandering in a wilderness that is not made for nearly that many people, because it doesn't have enough water for that many people and it doesn't have enough food normally for that many people, there has to be something miraculous take place in order to provide sustenance for them. And the Lord has done so. He's made water come from the rocks. He's made manna form on the ground in the mornings for them to be able to gather up and eat and make bread with. On one occasion, they come to a place where there's no water. And the Lord, in verse 8 of Numbers, the 20th chapter, tells Moses, "Take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. And you shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation and their beasts drink." I want you to understand what he's going to do. When you're talking about that many people, he's going to cause water to come for this rock. We're talking about a river's going to come out of this rock. We're not talking about it being a water fountain. I think when I was younger, I used to think that there was going to be a water fountain come and everybody was going to drink. We're going to talk about a river coming out of this rock, not a water fountain. Because think about how long it would take for 3.5 million people to have their turn at the water fountain. It's going to be a river breaking out here in the middle of the desert. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, "Listen now, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water from the rock for you out of this rock? Water for you out of this rock?" And then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation and their beasts drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you've not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I've given them." These were the waters of Meribah, because the sons of Israel contended with the Lord, and he proved himself holy among them. You ever read that and thought, "I've missed something here"? Well, first of all, you notice God told Moses to speak to the rock. And Moses didn't speak to the rock. He struck it twice. Now earlier, to bring forth water from the rock, God had told him to strike the rock on another occasion. But I think the biggest problem is when God is proving himself holy among the people, look what Moses says in verse 10. "Listen now, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock?" We? Shall me and God bring forth water for you out of this rock? Me and God are getting tired of this. Can you imagine putting yourself in that kind of company?
that you would put yourself in the company of God, assume that you would be in God's place, when God has told you to speak to the rock for Him, and here instead of speaking to the rock, you speak to the people as if you were God, and then strike the rock twice with a rod. It's a wonder God let water come from the rock, isn't it? He did it to glorify Himself, but He said, you know the price it's going to cost? Neither you nor Aaron are going to be able to enter into the promised land. What's the big deal? You see, it's a big deal. Speak! Hit the rock! What's the big deal? Doing exactly what God says glorifies God. Disobeying what God says and taking part of the credit dishonors God. And I'll tell you, the main thing that was wrong about what Moses did is he took his spiritual compass, and he sat it down and didn't look at it, and he did what he wanted to do because he was angry at these people. I can understand being angry at them, but he didn't do what God told him to do. In order to glorify himself, instead of glorifying His heavenly King. Back in February, on my way back from Ethiopia, my connection was through Jordan. And I was able to, had a layover there and was able to go to Mount Nebo, to the height of Pisgah. Never been there before. And you know, I had always thought that it was a miraculous thing that Moses would have been able to see the whole land before him, but it's not necessarily. It was cloudy on the day that I was there. But you really can see on a clear day the whole land before you from the height of Pisgah on Mount Nebo. All of the promised land. But imagine what it was like standing there and looking at the land that you have been longing for 40 years as you've wandered in the wilderness with these people and yet not being able to go over in it because of this day. Because you were angry. You sat down your godly compass and you lost it all. See what happens when you take your eyes off the Lord? All kinds of things happen. Another example of that can be found in the 22nd chapter of the book of Luke. This story happens on the night before Jesus is crucified. As you'll recall, Jesus had initiated the Lord's Supper with his apostles on that night, eating the Passover and initiated the Lord's Supper with them. told them that all of them were going to abandon him that very night. And Peter thought he was nuts. So they can all abandon you, but I won't abandon you. In the Garden of Gethsemane, when guards have come to take Jesus captive, Peter has enough courage to take a sword and strike off the servant of the high priest's ear. Malchus is the man's name. And Jesus tells him to put up his sword and heals Malchus before they go on. When Jesus is arrested, though, the apostles scatter. Luke tells us in chapter 22, beginning in verse 54, about the events that Jesus had prophesied. You remember he had told Peter, who was so bold, remember he had said that all the rest of these guys can run off and leave you, but I'll die with you. And Jesus had said, you know, before the cock crows three times, you'll deny, before the cock crows, you'll deny that three times that you know me. In verse 54, it says, having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. But Peter was following at a distance. And after they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them. And a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said, this man was with him too. But he denied it, saying, woman, I don't know him. A little later, another saw him and said, you're one of them too. And Peter said, man, I am not. And about an hour had passed, another man began to insist, saying, certainly this man was with him, for he is a Galilean too. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you're talking about. And immediately while he was still speaking, a rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. I want you to imagine how that would have happened. You'd hear, heard, he says, man, I am not. Peter looks up, and then, have you ever felt someone looking at you, and then you turn and look, and there your eyes meet? And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had told him, before the rooster crows today, you'll deny me three times. Imagine seeing the face of Jesus at that moment. Imagine it. Imagine what the face of Jesus would have looked like. That disappointed look of Jesus on your face, on his face. And he went out and he wept bitterly. You think Peter was thinking in a godly manner that night? I think he took his compass and I think he put it in his toga pocket. Togas don't have pockets, but I think he took it and put it somewhere. He sure wasn't looking in the right direction, was he? He was thinking about survival. I think he was scared. I think he was thinking about self-survival. Probably hadn't thought about that conversation with Jesus since they had had it, until he heard that rooster crow, and then looked at Jesus, and Jesus turned and looked at him, and he felt the worst feeling he'd ever felt in his life. I think later when Peter was executed, if we can understand anything about the traditions of history, Peter was supposed to have been crucified as a martyr. If Peter was crucified, I bet that didn't hurt him as much as this day did. And he went out and wept bitterly because he knew he had been ungodly because he was afraid. In the third chapter of 2 Peter, there's a situation here where it uses the word ungodly. Because sometimes we lose sight of the fact that there is coming a day in which there are people who are going to lose sight of the fact that the Lord is there. Sometimes they're going to lose sight of it just because there are things that they want to do, because they're rebels, just like Adam and Eve were. And sometimes there are going to be people who get angry and lose sight of the Lord, just like Moses did. And sometimes there are going to be people who become afraid and lose sight of the Lord, just like Peter did. But you notice it talks in 2 Peter 3 about ungodliness and tries to help us remember that there is a great day coming. Beginning in verse 7, it says, "By his word, the present heavens and earth are being reserved for fire, kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men." Now again, I want you to remember what godliness means. Doesn't necessarily mean those who are as bad as they could be. It just means those people who took that godly compass that kept them focused on the Lord and put it in their pocket. Or threw it away. Doesn't mean they never had one. It means just they didn't keep a Godward attitude about things. Live their lives not focusing on what God wanted them to do. They may have been good neighbors. They may have been good people in many ways, but God just didn't play a part in them. But that's what the day of judgment and the destruction is intended for, people who didn't have a Godward attitude. But don't let this one fact escape your notice, beloved, that with the Lord one day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years like one day. But the Lord is not slow about his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient towards you, not wishing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? It is a rhetorical question. It's one that has an obvious answer. Some people think hell is just for the handful of people like Adolf Hitler and Genghis Khan, who were the great monsters of history, and everybody else gets to go to heaven. You know who it tells us here the destruction of hell is for? Those who live their lives and didn't have a Godward attitude. What kind of people then should we be? If hell is certain and judgment is coming nearer each day, we ought to be people who live lives of holy conduct and godliness with a Godward attitude, to take that godly compass out and keep it always before us, to think about what the Lord would have me do, to make sure that we live our lives thinking about what God would have me to do rather than what I want to do, to think about what God would have me to do rather than giving in to our anger or giving in to our fear or giving in to those things that people who are ungodly give in to. You see, you take your eyes off Jesus and all kinds of things can happen. You keep your eyes on the Lord and you can remain a godly person and be one of those people who spends eternity with the Lord because you've actually spent your life with Him as well. How are you spending your life tonight? Are you spending your life in godly fashion? Is the Lord a part of every one of your days, every one of your nights? If He's not, then you need to correct that while there's time and opportunity. Come in faith. Show it through repentance. Confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And we can baptize you into Jesus Christ this very evening. If you as a child of God haven't lived the kind of life that you need to live, then you need to get your focus back on the Lord and make sure that you have a Godward attitude in the way that you live. Because really, in the final analysis, there's only two choices. The Lord's coming back in destruction on those who live lives that aren't Godward. And He's coming back to take home with Him those who are godly in the way that they live and the way that they think. You have the choice. What will it be? Think about it. And if we can help anyone in their obedience to the Lord tonight, please come while together we stand and sing.